Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The UN Refugee Agency is appealing to countries worldwide to provide homes for nearly 500,000 of the most vulnerable Syrian refugees. The UNHCR is urging representatives of more than 90 countries attending a ministerial-level conference to grant refuge to the Syrians through resettlement and other humanitarian programs.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, a young Nigerian girl who says she is one of hundreds kidnapped in Chibok nearly 2 years ago apparently is not who she claims to be. Tunisia's peaceful transition to democracy is threatened by terrorism from neighboring Libya. And food insecurity worsens in Zimbabwe as some sell off their livestock. We'll have these stories and more. Stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, the U.S.-Nigeria Bi-National Commission is meeting today here in Washington. The commission was established in 2010 to enhance bilateral relations and promote diplomatic, economic, and security cooperation. Secretary of State John Kerry addressed the commission today alongside Nigerian Foreign Minister Jeffrey Onyama. Mr. Kerry praised Nigeria for its peaceful elections and efforts to root out corruption.
Nigeria's future is in Nigerians' hands. We respect that. The United States is here to help, to meet your needs, to listen to you carefully, to understand what it is that you believe is necessary, and to work with you where we can to implement. Our development assistance this year will top $600 million. And we're working closely with your leaders, the leaders of your health ministry, to halt the misery that is spread by HIV/AIDS, by malaria, and by TB. Our Power Africa initiative is aimed at strengthening the energy sector, where shortage in electricity has frustrated the population and impeded growth. And our long-term food security program, Feed the Future, is helping to create more efficient agriculture and to raise rural incomes in doing that.
Kerry also spoke about the ongoing insurgency in northern Nigeria by Boko Haram militants, which he says has taken the lives of thousands of innocent civilians.
It is an outrage that any group anywhere would brainwash young people, including little girls, to strap explosives to their bodies and walk into an open marketplace with the intent of murdering their own families, neighbors, and themselves. That is what Boko Haram does. And that is why these terrorists have to be stopped and why the United States of America and President Obama are deeply committed to help Nigeria in this struggle. Under President Buhari, Nigeria has been taking the fight to Boko Haram, and it has reduced Boko Haram's capacity to launch full-scale attacks. However, the group still remains a threat, a serious threat to the entire region. And in recent months, our governments have been collaborating on new ways to institute security measures, including counter-IED equipment, improved information sharing, and training and equipping 2 infantry battalions. Now, I want to be clear. This aid is predicated on the understanding that even when countering a group as ruthless as Boko Haram, security forces have a duty to set the standard with respect to human rights. One abuse does not excuse another. Both our governments know that all military action is required to protect civilians from terrorists. The long-term solution requires effective governance and the creation of jobs that give young people a deep stake in the future of their communities. The threat that is posed by Boko Haram is serious. But it must not, and I really believe this, it will not be allowed to shape Nigeria's future. Nigeria is a country with an almost boundless capacity for economic growth. Believe in that.
Nigerian Foreign Minister Jeffrey Onyema also addressed the U.S.-Nigeria Binational Commission. He says when President Buhari took office, Nigeria faced many obstacles and was not able to take advantage of all of its resources.
We're a country that really shouldn't be where we find ourselves today, economically, technologically, socially. Our successive governments have failed our people. A country blessed with such amazing resources, human resources, as you know, here in the United States, with a countless number of Nigerians, a lot of them doing extremely well in your country. Tremendous human resources and also material resources. And we just have not been able, unfortunately, for any number of reasons, been able to utilize those amazing assets to deliver the kinds of prosperity to our people that they clearly deserve. And President Buhari has really persisted. He is somebody, as you all know, whose unimpeachable integrity is respected in Nigeria and around the world. And it was not an easy task for him in opposition to come into power, but as you found also with your incumbent president, anything and everything is possible. And, you know, you really just have to have that determination, that faith, and that belief, and that drive. And he had that.
Nigerian Foreign Minister Jeffrey Onyema speaking today in Washington. The Associated Press reports that a young Nigerian girl who says she is one of hundreds kidnapped in Chibok nearly 2 years ago is not who she claims to be. A Nigerian official says the girl is actually from a nearby community. The child, described as about 10 years old, was arrested Friday in Cameroon with explosives strapped to her body. The Nigerian militant group Boko Haram has been using women and girls as suicide bombers. Boko Haram abducted 276 Chibok schoolgirls in April 2014. Some escaped, but 219 remain missing. The chairman of the Chibok Parents Association, Yabuku Nkeki, says he is still waiting for the government to bring him to Cameroon to meet with the girl. His 14-year-old niece was among those taken. More than 2 million Nigerians have been displaced by the Boko Haram insurgency in the northwest of the country. Many who once sought refuge in neighboring communities are moving into Nigerian government camps for the internally displaced. One camp in Borno State now houses as many as 300,000 civilians. From Kano, reporter Abubakar Haruna Galadanchi talked with VOA's David Arnold about difficult conditions in the camp and about a woman he met who just gave birth to a baby girl in the camp.
The camp looked like a war zone, because I can tell you there are so many women and even small children. Most of those small children, their parents and their relatives, they have been killed. We don't know anybody. So somebody or among the NEMA officials or other aid organizations, they will come and pick it so that they will manage it with in a classroom. Or you can find that an old woman, she used to take care of so many children, like 10, 15, up to 20.
Tell me about this young woman whose family is now dead and who just delivered a baby.
She told me that she's from Dalori town, that is in Borno State, Maiduguri Central. And she told me that my husband, 1 year and 2 months, my husband was slaughtered in front of my eyes by Boko Haram. And when she's telling me that, she broke down with tears. So she's telling me that I have nowhere else to go. So I would rather decide to stay here in the camp. Maybe after government will decide to give us something to do or somewhere else to go. But for now, she can tell me that all my relatives, my husband, my friends, and my family members have been killed by Boko Haram.
What do you think will be the future for this young woman and her baby?
From what I learned from these people, that the government must do a hectic work so as to control the minds of those people. Because I can tell you that from what this woman told me, that I don't think someone will easily forget the way someone killed your husband. So that our government used to do something tangible for these people so as to try to erase that memory from their minds, so that one day they will not be a threat to the northern, eastern part of the country, as well as Nigeria in general.
And this baby that was born, what is the baby's name?
She told me that the name of the baby is Fatima. That is, Borno people used to call Fatima with Palmata, but all of them is the same.
What is your impression about the manner in which the government has been operating this camp?
The government is trying a little, because as you have said, and even from the statistics, almost 2.something million displaced. I think the government needs to do more so that to erase that terrible memory in the minds of those people, so that one day these people, either a woman or a young children, even the babies, in the near future, there will not be a threat to the northern part of the country as well as Nigeria.
That was reporter Abubakar Haruna Galadanchi from Kano. He spoke with VOA's David Arnold. This week, only small numbers of migrants and refugees had arrived on Greek islands. It was assumed that the new deal between the EU and Turkey was responsible. The deal calls for new arrivals to be sent back to Turkey for registration. For every Syrian returned to Turkey, another will be resettled in Europe. However, there was a spike in new arrivals today. The Associated Press reports hundreds of people landed on four Greek islands, including Lesbos, which had been a main destination point. Also, the French news agency reports that 152 migrants were rescued today off the coast of Libya. Coast Guard vessels intercepted a vessel about to sink early this morning. Later, 32 others were rescued in another incident on the Mediterranean. This week, AP reports that Libyan Coast Guard rescued 750 migrants, while 3,000 others were rescued by mostly Italian ships. And in northeastern Paris today, police evacuated several hundred migrants who built a makeshift camp near a train station. Authorities say the evacuation was peaceful and those in the camp will be relocated. The UN Refugee Agency is appealing to countries worldwide to provide homes for nearly 500,000 of the most vulnerable Syrian refugees. The UNHCR is urging representatives of more than 90 countries attending a ministerial-level conference to grant refuge to the Syrians through resettlement and other humanitarian programs. Lisa Schlein reports from the UNHCR conference in Geneva.
Countries neighboring Syria are bearing the brunt of the Syrian refugee crisis. They are hosting 4.8 million refugees. The UN Refugee Agency says other nations must shoulder some of the burden. UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi says his agency aims to resettle one-tenth, or about 480,000 of the refugees, over the next 3 years. He acknowledges it will not be easy, especially in light of the growing resistance by nations in Europe and elsewhere to welcome people fleeing conflict and persecution. He says large numbers of desperate Syrians are undertaking dangerous journeys across the Mediterranean Sea in search of refuge in Europe. He indicates the recent EU-Turkey resettlement agreement is unlikely to resolve the Syrian refugee crisis.
Our point to both Turkey and the European Union, and in fact to the international community, is that legal pathways for admission are a very powerful alternative to dangerous journeys, especially for vulnerable people. So the sooner those are implemented, the more people will be discouraged from resorting to boats and other means of movement.
Besides resettlement, the UNHCR offers other legal pathways for countries to consider. These include academic scholarships, humanitarian visas, accelerated and easier family reunification programs, and medical treatment. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon lends his voice to the UNHCR's appeal for countries to resettle Syrian refugees. He says nations benefit from refugees who bring valuable new skills and make many positive economic contributions to their societies.
Attempts to demonize people fleeing conflict and persecution are not only demeaning, offensive, and counterproductive, they are factually wrong. And measures to control the entry of refugees must safeguard the human rights and dignity of each individual person.
The Syrian refugee crisis is the world's largest since World War II. The UNHCR reports countries have offered more than 179,000 resettlement places for Syrian refugees since 2013. It says it hopes more pledges will be forthcoming during the conference. It adds, this is a global crisis that needs a global response. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight Live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Coming up on 22 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. A young Nigerian girl who says she is one of hundreds kidnapped in Chibok nearly 2 years ago is not who she claims to be. Hundreds of migrants landed on four Greek islands today, while 152 migrants were rescued off the coast of Libya. And the UN Refugee Agency is appealing to countries worldwide to provide homes for nearly 500,000 of the most vulnerable Syrian refugees. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. A peaceful transition to democracy in Tunisia proved to be a rare success story of the Arab Spring. However, the young democracy is threatened by terrorism spilling over its border from Libya. Tunisian ambassador to the U.S., Faisal Koya, talked about the security risk facing his country and efforts to counter them. Senior Middle East reporter Mohamed El-Shenawi has the story.
Tunisia was fortunate to have pragmatic politicians who preferred compromise over confrontation. The Islamist political party in Nahda, who won the first elections after the 2011 revolution, voluntarily handed over power to a technocrat government. A strong civil society in Tunisia also helped with the peaceful transition toward democracy. But despite the success, Ambassador Kouya says his country still faces serious threats and challenges.
We are facing so many challenges internally because of the terrorist attacks on Tunisia. Second, because of the many problems we are facing and which represents the inheritance of the former regimes and especially of 23 years of authoritarian regime, such as poverty, unemployment, and disparities and a huge gap between the coastal lands and the cities and the inland.
The political and security vacuum in neighboring Libya has become a major concern for Tunisia because it has allowed Libya to become a breeding ground for terrorists. Following repeated attacks last year, tourism, one of Tunisia's major industries, dropped by nearly 50%. Tunisia recently hosted a conference of neighboring countries to discuss the best ways to counter the security threat from Libya. Ambassador Kouya summarizes the outcome.
The solution for this crisis in Libya is to install the new government. And we should create a military forces in Libya that are Republican, that obey to the government, not to militias, of course, by excluding those who are involved in terrorism. The other element is to gather the guns that are circulating in Libya. We are talking about 30 million weapons.
Nevertheless, Tunisia opposes a unilateral Western military intervention to counter the expansion of the Islamic State fighters in Libya.
Our official position is clear. Any foreign intervention in Libya is not accepted by Tunisia. The only ones who can decide for any foreign intervention are the Libyans. Unless a government, a legal government, is installed in Libya and the Libyan government decides to allow any foreign intervention.
However, UN-sponsored efforts to install a unity government have failed so far to allow the Libyan prime minister to fly from Tunisia to Tripoli. Libya's UN-backed unity government has accused authorities in Tripoli of closing down the capital's airspace to prevent it from traveling from Tunisia to start work. A security source said that an armed group had closed the airspace to block a flight intended to bring in the unity government's prime minister, Faiz Sarraj. According to a recent report by the Soufan Group, a security consulting firm, up to 7,000 Tunisians have joined ISIS in Syria and Iraq. The Tunisian ambassador describes that as an exaggeration. He says his country is well prepared to prevent returning Tunisian fighters from becoming an added security threat.
Our forces are there, and we are doing our best to protect the borders, and we will not allow terrorists to get into Tunisia without being arrested and investigated. And for those who are really implicated in terrorism, they should be punished.
Ambassador Qoui'a praises U.S. support for Tunisia, especially in equipping and training forces to counter security threats and securing Tunisian borders. Mohammed El-Shinawi, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Mohammed. In related news, there's late word today that Faiz Sarraj, the head of the UN brokered Libyan government, and six deputies of the Presidential Council arrived by boat today from Tunisia. However, the foreign minister of the Islamist rival government said their arrival was unacceptable. The Associated Press says as a result, they remain at a naval base. Tunisia is getting some economic help from the World Bank, International Monetary Fund, and the International Labor Organization. The World Bank reportedly plans to provide up to $1 billion in aid annually. The announcement followed a meeting that included World Bank President Jim Jong Kim, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, and Tunisian officials. Meanwhile, the IMF says final details are being worked out for a four-year loan worth nearly $3 billion. The IMF says the funds are to be used for economic reforms. And the International Labor Organization says it plans to help Tunisia deal with high unemployment. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And please stay tuned for the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next on Straight Talk Africa. We will talk about the empowerment of women. Is it a myth or reality? Tune in to Straight Talk Africa Wednesday at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast comes to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.